Joanne Clues, sitting in for John Kroll today for an American Graduate edition of No Limits. American Graduate's a public media initiative addressing the high school dropout crisis, and we here at WFYI take that challenge pretty seriously. At the heart of the issue, we're trying again to address the high school dropout rate, and those that are in the classroom really have more at stake than probably anybody else in this conversation, but we rarely have the chance to bring teachers and students into the studios during the school year. So today, I'm going to be talking with students and with teachers who very kindly have taken time out of their summer break. I'm thinking, hoping with the hot day, that I didn't interrupt too many activities, but very, very grateful to have our guest with us today. In this first segment, I'm going to talk with three high school students who are in here with this, in the studio with me this afternoon. And I want to remind everybody that the phone lines are closed today. However, we do want you to join in the conversation. Please, you can find us on Twitter and, of course, on Facebook as well at our No Limits Facebook page. With us today, we have Caleb Rofox, and he is a senior at Decatur Central, and he's also a member of the Youth Advisory Council for McCoy, the Marion County Commission on Youth. We also have with us Gabe Burkhart. He's a junior at Plainfield High School, and Rose Williams is here. She's a senior at Perry Meridian High School. Thank you, you guys, for coming in this afternoon.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem.
Nice to have you here. And really, you know, a rare opportunity to have some teenagers take to the airwaves, so we're very grateful for that today. There's so much that's happening right now, and you guys probably hear all of the conversation with adults, certainly, about what's happening with education. Do you feel like your voices get to be heard very often with that, Rose?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
You only get maybe like one or two kids that are willing to even talk about it, and a lot of the people affected aren't even asked to speak about anything. So it's sort of saddening because a lot of the things that are important get skipped over because the kids that talk are the ones that don't deal with them. And so I just find it odd that that happens a lot. And some of the teachers that get to speak or want to make the changes aren't looking for what's better for the students that need the help. And so, yeah, that's sad.
Gabe, I saw you nodding your head.
Well, I agree with what she said. I mean, I feel like we don't have much of a say at all. We're kind of just there for the ride.
Yeah. And Caleb, do you have any thoughts on that, about the whole, all the conversations happening about education, what we need to do, what doesn't need to happen? Do you feel like you've got ability to impact that or to speak to that?
Well, kind of as like a person, just one person, maybe not so much, but if we had like a big group of students that are willing to make the change, I believe that it could happen, along with some teachers who want to stand alongside with us, that we could get something done.
Well, let's start with maybe a little bit about where you guys are in your high school careers. Rose, you're going to be finishing up this year. What kinds of things do you like to do, and do you have any plans for after high school?
Yeah, I'm going to go to college after high school. but no, I don't really have very many things I like to do outside of school, because when I was younger, I was told that schooling is the most important thing, so I need to try my best in that. And, you know, sometimes the social things fall to the wayside, but it's not like I mind it. And, you know, it's just go to school, go to college, get an awesome job, and all the fun stuff will come next, you know?
Yeah. Are you a nerd?
No.
That's probably not even the word people use now.
That's really more or less a derogatory term.
Well, it was always a derogatory term. I'm throwing it out. I'm throwing it out there to get some reaction, and I can see it worked. Gabe, what's your story?
Well, I'm going to be a junior this next year, so I've got, you know, half my high school career left. But I'm ready for college, definitely. And I think the military is after college for me. Probably, I'm hoping to go to VMI or West Point are my two schools I want to be at. So that's what I'm aiming for as of right now.
Are you like an A student, a B student?
Yes, I'm a pretty decent student.
Pretty
school.
Good student. Mm-hmm. Caleb.
Oh well.
Tell us about life for you.
Life for me is pretty simple. I just go to school, do my best, come home, just relax, and after school, after college, or after high school, I plan to go to college and become a lawyer. So that's what I'm striving for right now.
Okay. When we talk about everything that's going on with education right now, the three of you sound like you have definite goals and plans, and that classes and your academic part of all of that is going pretty well. What helps you be successful? What really contributes to that? We'll start over here with Rose first and just go in order, ladies first.
I think it's building people up about it that really helps, because, you know, if you have your mom or your dad or a teacher saying, if you get bad grades, you aren't going to go anywhere in life, well, that doesn't really help a person, because they're like, oh, well, I'm already set up to fail, why try? So building them up, saying, you know, hey, you're doing good, you just got to try a little bit harder, you can make those A's, you can make those good grades, it's really more helpful. And, you know, stuff like that is really important. And really telling your kids the things that are in reach and not giving them the most outrageous goals is even more helpful, because it gives them a definite, strong hold on what's possible.
So you don't want to set the bar too high.
Because that'll make people feel as if they're more of a failure if they can't reach it, you know? And if it's not out of reach to begin with, then it'll make them feel as if they succeed. And you got to start that when they're little. Because if you try to be, strong about it, make the good grades when they're in kindergarten, and, you know, you say, oh, you made bad grades, well, this stuff gets taken away that they like, then they aren't going to want to do it. And then when they're older and you want to start building them up, they're going to sort of resist that, and they won't enjoy it as much.
Okay. Gabe?
For me personally, it's probably sports that keeps me, you know, doing well in school. I play football and baseball, and without those, I'm not sure how I would do in class. Me knowing that if I don't get good grades, I'm not going to play sports, and then that's my life. That's all I do.
I've heard, you know, and we do hear about that when you make sure that students are involved in some kind of an activity that's not necessarily related directly to the classroom work that they feel strongly about, that they're likely, like you said, you're going to keep the grades up. Mm-hmm. You're very interested in that, and that's a big motivator for you.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Caleb, what keeps you going?
Well, I think what keeps me going is my mom, because she's always like my coach type. And I believe that at least everyone needs one person to keep them motivated, like to bring them up, to tell them that they should achieve more instead of having someone that's okay with them failing, because that's not going to help them progress in life. It's just helps them accept that their failures is an okay thing, which is really not.
I'm Joanne Clues, and you're listening to an American Graduate edition of No Limits on 90.1 WFYI. We have students in the studio with us for this first part of the program, and then teachers join us later. I have with me high school seniors. We have Rose with us. Rose is a senior at, see if I can get this right, at Perry Meridian High School. And we also have with us Gabe Burkhart, a junior, at Plainfield High School. I promoted you. And Caleb Rofox, who is a senior with Decatur Central High School. So very, very pleased to have you guys here. You've talked about the fact that motivation is important, and the influence of parents, the influence of outside activities like sports can be very important. Are there things in the classroom itself, when you go through that school day, that happen that make it successful? And now I guess I'm asking you, to tell a little bit about maybe teaching styles or things that happen with the other students in the classroom that contribute to success.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a teaching style that works the best, but just the teachers themselves. You can tell usually within the first week of the school year which teachers are going to try to help you succeed, which teachers don't care or are in it for their money, and the teachers that are going to try and make you fail. It's very, very simple to figure those people out, because it shows up so quickly. And the ones that will try and help you succeed are the ones that will build you up. And the people who struggle in the classroom get the greatest advance from them. But the ones that make you fail, they do it in such a way that they get the grades they need to not get, you know, disciplined by the principals or, you know, the teachers, advisors. But it's not the best that you could possibly do. They may give you too much homework, or they may not, you know, give you enough class participation, things like that. And I think that's really detrimental.
Gabe?
I think if there was a teaching style that I enjoy the most, it would probably be interactive, like with groups or our teachers, not just standing there at the smart board just rambling on talking. I have to be doing something.
Okay, Caleb, I'm hearing a yeah on that.
Yeah, I agree with what he said too. And also what Rose said, like a good parent or teacher student relationship is good. Like if you have a teacher that you like, you actually want to do their work and want to stay on their good side and like, you know, keep them happy and not want to get in trouble in their class. But if there's a teacher that you really don't care about, you really don't really care about their work or anything they're saying. So I believe that's important.
What about what the rest of us can do? American Graduate, it's an initiative across the country. And what we're trying to do, we don't envision public media as the organization that has the answers. We don't necessarily know what's going to help, but we know that we've got an ability to reach people. So we want to talk about what can the community do? What do you need from somebody like me to help you do your best in school?
I'm not sure about that, actually, because it's always been, you know, work to make, you know, your parents proud and work to make your teachers glad that you tried in their class. And so I've never really needed too much help from the community. I guess if they had some sort of fundraiser where if a certain amount of students get good grades, you know, funding goes to their school for something, but I'm sure they already do stuff like that. I'm not too sure because I haven't heard too much about it, you know. Have you guys?
I agree with Rose. I guess if there was more pride in the town as a whole,
yeah,
and getting within every extracurricular activity that we do outside of school, and if they, you know, had a say themselves for what we do in the classroom, I think that could help.
So when you say more pride, Gabe, are you talking about more people showing up to see you play sports?
Not that. I think just everybody having the same common goal to make all of our students, you know, better as a whole. I think that'd be what I'm trying to say, at least. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Oh, well, how do I feel? That what media could do to help students would probably give opportunities in a way that seems appealable for the youth that they're trying to reach. Like, have a good, like, reward or, like, some motivation that they would appeal to them so they could, like, strive for that goal. Other than that, I myself don't really see a lot of the media. I don't really watch TV or the news.
Well, you know, not just because I'm sitting here as somebody who's involved in media, but I mean, when I go home, when I'm away from the microphone, are there things that I could be doing to help either you, Caleb, or your school, or just in general, help this whole notion of we want our kids to graduate from high school and be successful?
Oh, well, if you see a kid on the street, be like, hey, stay in school, get good grades, and then just walk in the house. They'll probably just walk away smiling or something, just like, someone believes in me.
Okay, all right.
I think that that stuff's really important because it helps build an individual person up and it gradually goes on to the other people. But, you know, things like an increase in grades, say maybe someone had a C to begin with and they get a B and then an A in that class by the end of the school year, they should give some sort of reward or award at the end of that school year for it. You know, that's kind of important, too, because that's why a lot of kids don't want to get better grades. They say, oh, the A achievers get the best, so why should I try? Let's just keep with the C's. I'm passing, you know.
I agree with them. That's right on the same page where I was at.
Just have some more incentives and make sure that you know that everybody's in your corner.
Yes, ma'am.
Everybody has your back. That's important to know. And, you know, again, we rarely get the opportunity to talk to you know, students, especially to high school age folks. I know that, you know, during the year we have a lot of programming, but it's when you guys are in the classroom. So we're really glad that you were able to be here with us. Caleb Rofox, senior at Decatur Central, along with Gabe Burkhardt, a junior at Plainfield, and Rose Williams, senior at Paramuridian High School. The teachers will be in here next. Stay tuned for an American Graduate edition of No Limits. I'm Joanne Clues, back with an American Graduate edition of No Limits, sitting in for John Kroll this week on WFYI. John will return next week, of course, and very grateful that he's allowing me to sit in his chair this afternoon. It's a hot afternoon out there. It's nice and cool here in the studio, and we have with us for this segment teachers from across the city, across the Indianapolis area, to talk about what's happening in the classrooms. I'm very grateful to have with me Adrian Reiswig, and I don't know if I said that correctly.
Close enough. Work.
Rice work. Okay. And I actually have worked with Adrienne in the community theater venue. So she also, though, is a teacher at a magnet school in IPS. She teaches at Mary Nicholson Performing Arts Academy, sometimes known as IPS School Number 70, and teaches fourth graders there. Alan Epstein is here. He teaches third grade students at a metropolitan school district on the west side of the city. And we also have with us Intianu Sababu. Did I say that one?
Perfect, Joanne.
Wow. See, that's
a mouthful.
I practiced that one to make sure I would get that correct. And Intianu teaches special education in Lawrence Township at the Fall Creek Valley Middle School, teaches work specifically with 8th grade students. Mm-hmm. And as you explained, some people may or may not know this, but there are different categorizations when you work with special ed. And so you might maybe want to explain a little bit about the student population that you work with.
Well, I'm licensed in mild interventions, which means I can work with students with learning disabilities, mild impairments, but I specifically work with students with emotional disabilities. So the students I work with have average to above average intelligence. They're perfectly capable academically, but they have behaviors or the emotionality that impedes their learning and the learning of others. So they just have difficulty functioning and maintaining in a regular classroom. So they're removed to a smaller environment for more support.
I, had heard about emotional difficulties, but until I really encountered them firsthand, I did some substitute teaching last fall. Mm-hmm. Went into a classroom, and the teacher let me know before the students came back from lunch, they were moving the students from room to room, and that I was getting a new group, and that she'd given me a student's name and said that he had some emotional difficulties and that he was oppositional defiant. And it unwound very quickly when he came back in the room. The weather was bad that day. They couldn't take their recess or break outside, so they were confined to the room. And he melted down so fast, I had no skills to deal with it.
Oh, you just try your best. That's all you can do.
You do this full time, though.
I do it every day, all day, and I absolutely love it. So
really?
I do. There's never a dull moment.
How long have you been doing this?
For, I'm entering my 9th year of teaching, so my entire teaching career.
Sure. Basically. Okay. Alan, I actually know through a mutual friend who was in education, and I encountered Alan earlier this spring when I was out on a story, and there he was in the hallway, and we saw each other and knew that we remembered each other from somewhere, and boom, he's back in the picture. And Alan, you teach third grade students.
Yes, I teach third grade students, and actually it was your voice that I recognized from hearing your voice on the radio doing weather and traffic. And then eventually, I put two and two together and matched your face with the voice.
Alan has a very, I think, unique style. I have not seen you work with students, but I know that you have a very interactive, very, I think, engaging style, and you certainly must use that with your students as well.
Well, gosh, those are some great words, and I would appreciate anyone to describe my teaching style with those two words.
How long have you been in the classroom?
I'll be starting my 13th school year at this particular school in August.
Wow.
Yeah.
And previously you worked with fourth grade students?
Well, I started teaching at this school fourth grade, and then I taught fifth grade, and the last 9 years have been third grade.
Okay. Adrienne Weisberg is here, and she works at IPS School 70. That's the Mary Nicholson Performing Arts Academy, working with fourth graders. And oftentimes when we think of these performing arts schools, we think of the things that we've seen on television, so we think of high school level. You say that this instruction starts in kindergarten.
Well, absolutely. They can't get to Juilliard unless they're exposed to performing arts early and allowed to experience things that they think they love. School 70 is the magnet elementary school for the performing arts. We don't have an audition requirement. We take all kids who are interested. It encompasses theater, voice, vocal music, instrumental music, dance, and visual arts. There's no judgment. The kids are fostered. There are special pull-out times that they can do the ones they love and are accepted in. And when our kids are finished with fifth grade, they then apply to Broad Ripple, which is the middle and high school for the performing arts. So our goal is to get as many children as interested to go on.
How long have you been working as a teacher, and how long have you been in Indianapolis Public Schools?
The coming year will be my 15th overall, my 11th in IPS, and my third at School 70.
Wow. So we have a variety of specialties and focuses here in the room, and I'm delighted to have that today. What things are working in the classroom? What things help to make things successful? And Tianu?
At my particular school and in my particular district, which is Lawrence Township, I will say that there is a great excitement about our readers and writers workshops, which is implemented, I believe, at all levels and is going to be implemented at the high school level. So this is where students are able to choose the excitement for reading that they have. They're able to choose their own reading material, and then we go in with many lessons and just expose them to as much as we possibly can throughout the school year to many different reading strategies, writing strategies, and it's really a good opportunity for not only the students to be creative, but for us as teachers as well. So we are able to share our passion for reading and writing and learning too, and then in the process we learn so much from the students. So that's one thing that's new in our district that I'm really excited about, and I've noticed that a lot of my colleagues are really excited about as well.
What about for you, Alan? What do you think really contributes to classroom success? Are there two or three key things or one key thing that you think has to be recognized?
Well, the first thing that I think about is school climate, and it can spread into a classroom. And when I say school climate, what I mean is every single student knows why they're at our school. They understand that. It's very clear. And they all know what we expect from them. And that is something I've discovered has gone a long way. I also think that, as some of the students were saying earlier, another ingredient of success in a classroom I see on a regular basis is people having a chance to collaborate and interact and work together and do things. I've always believed that collaboration can produce greater things than any single individual could produce by his or herself.
You're talking about some of the interdisciplinary teaching or co-teaching or just being able to collaborate in general.
Well, when I say collaborate, I'm talking about the students, the third graders in this case, working and doing things together, having a chance. You were just talking about your readers and writers workshops. And so, for example, one thing that I like to do is I like to match the students with different literature books. And in addition to matching them to the books that they read, they also spend time doing projects related to the book and meeting with each other to talk about the books and different selected skills or whatever it is that we wanted to address.
Sure. Okay. A lot of talk here about those reading skills, which we know are so important early on. Adrian, what, in your opinion, what are some of the key things that would help make a successful classroom?
Well, I would certainly agree with everything else that has been said. Good relationships between the students and between the students and the teacher and between the teacher and the parents is some bedrock stuff. If you have that, you have every good chance for success. But at School 70, something that's particular to us that is very successful and really engages the kids is what we call arts integration. This is you certainly don't have to be in an arts magnet to do this. I'm sure most teachers are doing this everywhere. But as an example, we've just sat down and written curriculum incorporating as many of the performing and graphic arts as possible into every unit in every subject, including math and science. The one that I cite when people say, well, what do you mean by that? In the old days, when someone did a book report, you could integrate the arts by having them draw a poster. That's not terribly innovative, but it's what we used to do, quote, in the olden days. Now, when our fourth graders are studying angles, two people will pair up and get down on the floor and lay on the floor at right angles or to make an acute angle out of their two bodies. Someone else may very well photograph them and will make a collage of that on the bulletin board.
So you've kind of got performing arts, visual arts,
And bodily kinesthetic, you know, movement is very important.
At the same time, we hear about these learning styles, too, that some people are visual learners, some people are kinesthetic learners. There's so many different things that are being incorporated in the classroom these days, I guess, technologies that are out there.
And the more of them we try to incorporate, the better chance we have of reaching each and every learner.
Sure. Alan, you look like you wanted to say something.
Well, Not only that, and a lot of times I try to stay out of the way of the kids, and I just try to have multiple and different types of activities in all subject areas with all the different disciplines that you were just talking about, and opportunities for them to participate independently. Of course, I'm there and I'm watching and I can see it, but a lot of times I think people can learn things quite easily and well when no one's in their way.
Exactly. And I would like to piggyback off of that. Even as when I was a student, where we were used to rote memorization or lecture style and trying to keep up with the technology and all of the kids are so much more interactive, and there's just so many, it's so sort of overwhelming, all of the different things that are out there that we could utilize to bring into the classroom and to help our students learn. So it's really, it's an exciting challenge.
Different ideas come and go. Different initiatives are always being tried, and I think I've heard it referred to as the silver bullet in education. Is it a one-size-fits-all approach? I don't know how you feel as teachers when you see these waves of different things coming through, like we'll try this or we'll try that.
I would say yes and no. How's that? It's kind of like that conversation that a lot of us have had probably before about being fair and equal. Sort of, no? What are you thinking?
Adrienne's nodding her head.
I'm laughing. Whether it's kids in the classroom or, you know, our own children at home, yes, it's fair, but sometimes it's not, and that's the way it is.
That's how you have to deal with it, right?
As teachers, as classroom leaders, we deal with every situation the way it comes up, and I don't ever want to say, because I said so. You'll lose kids. But you can say, we have to deal with every situation as it comes up. You know, there are certain things everyone has to do. But, yes, I may cut so-and-so some slack on any particular day, and no, I won't have to tell you why. But if you need slack or if your puppy gets run over or something, you know, you'll be the one getting the slack. We have to keep their trust.
Well, and if you don't mind me adding on to what you just said, it's connected, and it makes a lot of sense to what you just said a moment ago when you were talking about what makes school successful, when you're talking about families and parents. And then when you add that to what we're saying, parents and families teaching and reinforcing and valuing the same things that we do, it makes a huge difference.
So how do you get the parent engagement? Is that a challenge sometimes?
Oh, it can definitely be a challenge because it kind of is twofold. Like, as educators, sometimes we lose sight of what parent engagement looks like. When you make a phone call, you want that parent to answer. When you send a letter home, you want them to respond. But this day and age, parent engagement, it can look a variety of different ways. No, you may not always be able to come to an IEP meeting or do this and that, but as long as you, like for my students, I send home a point sheet. As long as you sign that or at least talk to the student about whatever's going on, I think that's a great kind of engagement, and that's something that we don't typically see, and sometimes that leads to frustrations on the teacher side, but we have to recognize that parent engagement looks, it's in a variety of ways.
And I really try to take some extra steps if I can, even at the beginning of the school year. I try to call every single parent of all of my students. I'm really fortunate to have small class sizes, which is another ingredient of success. But I try to call every single parent before any child has a chance to get in trouble, because then I have a chance to introduce myself and say hello, and I'm not calling to tell them, well, maybe your daughter or your son did something that they weren't supposed to, because sometimes that's the way a parent and a teacher start.
Their dynamics.
Yeah. Right.
What a great idea. So the first interaction that you have with them is guaranteed to be a positive, or at the very least a neutral interaction before there would be an issue.
Right. Hopefully, right? And then I try to maintain that every week. I'll probably spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes every single school day emailing and or calling and talking with parents, only because they're so important and they help me so much.
Do you have any techniques, Adrienne, that you use, any specific techniques that you use to try to ensure that you've got good parental participation in the classroom?
Well, I'm going to piggyback right off of Alan. That's a good idea. That's a very good idea. And in our profession, we don't call it stealing. We call it collaborating. I'm going to collaborate on that idea and institute it. But one thing that I do, and I'm thinking lots of people do as well, is take time during the week to make two or three good calls. And I'll start the conversation by saying, you know, Mrs. Smith, it's Ms. Rice work from School 70, and I'm calling with good news. So don't, you know, I don't want them to freeze when they see the IPS exchange on their phone. It's terrific. I mean, we get such great kickback when we call to say, you know, so-and-so not only was prepared, but really volunteered. And you know what? She showed real leadership. There was a critical situation, and she handled it with great maturity. Because I want to mention, as far as success, I tell my fourth graders, we're not just teaching you to read and write. We're teaching you life skills. Mm-hmm. When the kids collaborate, when they give up a chance, you go ahead instead of me. These are life skills. These are the skills you're going to need for whatever profession they choose. And it's really thrilling to see that kind of character building.
And it happens every day in those classrooms. You probably also see things that are challenges, that are issues. We do want to talk about those as well. I'm Joanne Clues, and you're listening to an American Graduate Edition of No Limits on 90.1 WFYI. The phone lines are closed today for this special edition. However, we always want your participation, your feedback, and you can reach us on Twitter at WFYI and on the Facebook page, which is the No Limits Facebook page for this program. So please, your comments and your conversation are definitely part of what we want to do today. American Graduate is an initiative through public media to address the high school dropout crisis. And there are a variety of things that we're doing to try to address that. We're trying to raise the conversation, trying to get people involved and engaged, and very delighted to have the opportunity to have teachers with us here today to talk about this. There are some challenges in the classrooms as well. We'll be coming up on a break here in just a minute or two, but we definitely want to touch on those themes. If I could ask you in one or two words to sum up what some of your biggest challenges are before we go into break, and we'll hit those when we come back, what would you say they are? Adrienne, I'll start with you.
First thing that comes to my mind is lack of sleep on the part of the students, not the teacher.
Okay. All right. Alan.
I'm going to turn to my friend on my right and see if she's ready to stall for time.
Okay. And Tianu.
Well, my word would be support, 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 and that can come in a variety of ways.
Okay. Great.
I'll talk about it after the break. Well, there just aren't a lot of huge challenges. I feel really fortunate in a lot of ways. I've got great students, great parents, great school system. Of course, there are challenges, but nothing comes up to the top of my brain right now.
Great. Well, we have with us three Indianapolis area teachers, and we'll be back with more of the American Graduate Edition of No Limits on 90.1 WFYI. I'm Joanne Clues, sitting in today for John Kroll on this American Graduate Edition of No Limits, a special version today. Very honored to have the opportunity to do this. John Kroll will return next week. We have with us today, we spoke with students earlier, and we have teachers from across the Indianapolis area, and those include Intiano Sababu, and she is a special education teacher in Lawrence Township at Fall Creek Valley Middle School, where she works with eighth graders. Also, Alan Epstein is here. He teaches third grade at an elementary school, Metropolitan School District on Indianapolis' west side. And Adrienne Riceworg is here. She is a fourth grade teacher at IPS School Number 70, the Mary Nicholson Performing Arts Academy. Very delighted to have all three of you here in studio with me this afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
We talked about challenges in the classroom. Adrienne, you were very quick and you were very specific. Sleep.
Or lack of sleep was actually the more germane. It's not the only challenge. It may not necessarily be the biggest one, but it came right to my mind. Parents so often call me and say, what can I do? I have a B student. I think she can do A work. And my answer is almost inevitably, put her to sleep earlier. I once looked up the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines for the amount of sleep they recommend for 9 and 10 and 11-year-old children. I asked my children, and there wasn't one who was getting that much sleep as recommended by the experts. I've had kids who do poorly, and they're not lacking in intelligence. They're just lacking in sleep. If these children don't succeed and then they're put in after-school tutoring, you have an even longer school day when they're even more exhausted. It's such an easy fix for so many things, mood, learning ability, all kinds of things. the fact that we have lack of sleep is compounded by parents who are working. Sometimes they get home late, and in order to have quality time with the children are not going to bed as early as they might have in the old days or as when I would have put my own children to bed. It's a reality. I like to work with the parents, bring in social work if possible. But yes, if you're worried about your kid's achievement, a fourth grader should be in bed at 8:30 and asleep at 9.
Wow.
So says the Academy, not me.
That's early. That's early. I wonder if any kids are getting that kind of sleep. My gosh. However, we do know, though, that sleep does contribute to those things. I'm well beyond those school years, but adequate sleep, I think, it's still an issue. And when I know that I'm going to be short on it, I warn everybody. Because I know I'm going to behave differently. I know it's going to be a different day for me the next day when that takes place. Alan, you said that you have you feel very good about the situation at your school and with your kids. Is there anything that could make the situation better that could increase the success of your students that could help you do an even more outstanding job than you already do, right?
That's really nice of you to say. How about I go back and rewind a little bit to the challenge part, because I feel like my students in recent years have consistently had a lot of success in multiple ways. But I had a chance to think a little bit about the challenges. And one of the challenges that is most difficult for me, especially recently, and I'm even going to say last year was probably the most difficult year I've ever had teaching. In it, there's been an awful lot of change with regards to standards and expectations that teachers are being asked to teach children at different age levels and at different times. Change isn't always easy for our children, nor is it easy for us. And a lot of it, in a certain amount of time, is something that I have found to be challenging and difficult to try to make sure that I'm doing everything I can and teaching everything that I'm supposed to be teaching my students.
And Tiano?
Well, the challenges that I see, and I guess this is twofold with the solution in a way, is that, first of all, while I have the microphone here, just to mention the respect for educators, I became a teacher because my mom is an educator, and she does phenomenal. And I just remember there was a time where educators were looked upon as professionals and as that's something that many people wanted to become. So I just hope that people look back into that and see what a respectable field that it is, and that I know that there have been many negative issues, but there are more teachers out there who are really have a passion and a dedication and who are working countless hours to make your child's classroom experiences better. And then the other challenge I see kind of going along with that is just general lack of support. And one of the students, Gabe, mentioned the need for like pride in the town and in the community. And I think that's something that we're kind of lacking. And if we could really get back to that, I think that would make all the difference in the world.
What shows, what demonstrates that pride? What would need to happen? What would it look like?
Well, the first thing that pops to my mind is I look at, like, how with IPS that they're moving towards community schools where they're bringing in different organizations, different businesses to support the students. And that's happening at a lot of different districts as well. So just even something as simple as bringing in someone on a career day, or bringing in, because the kids need to see someone other than the teachers. They get tired of seeing us and hearing from us, and it's great that they get another voice to reinforce what we're trying to teach them and also give them a real-life exposure.
We know that students who drop out don't just decide one day that they're done. They may make that decision like that, but there's been probably a very long process for them of things that help contribute to making that decision. Lack of success, lack of support, lack of whatever, lack of interest, lack of engagement. You work, all of you, with younger students, but these are formative years for them. This is when some of those building blocks are happening. Do you see places where you think the unraveling starts with these students?
That is a great question. I really like that question.
It's kind of, I don't mean to drop a bomb on you.
I wouldn't have said it that way, and I wouldn't have think of I don't think of this so much necessarily as unraveling, but I think that there are some indicators and predictors, and there are certain things that people come to school with when they start kindergarten, with a certain amount of life experience and a certain amount of readiness. Not everyone has the same amount of that when they start school. And as people continue through their K through 12 career, that you can imagine the gap of in the people who are ready and who've had all these rich experiences to make connections to with all the content they're learning, as opposed to maybe a student or a person who, well, was more limited. So as far as answering your question again, I think that a lot of times that you might be able to maybe make some predictions at the very least.
What kinds of things are indicators? Adrian, do you see them?
We do, and I actually love the term unraveling, because I think that while some kids make quick decisions later on, I am going to say out loud what I think elementary teachers worry about, and that is that I hope I'm wrong, but I could have looked through my fourth grade room this year and laid a bet on which one or two of my students were the likeliest not to graduate high school. We can see them here.
What tells you that?
I'm not rating any of these more important than the next, but
sure.
Generally a lack of academic achievement, a lack of parental support, poor social skills, poor anger management.
I think education also is valued in different families. You were just talking about how your mom was a teacher.
Mine too.
And look how she instilled it. Education, and Rose was talking about that earlier in the show, and I've noticed that also, that the family's priority on education is important.
And Tiana, do you see indicators? Do you see things? You work with students who have already been identified as being probably a little bit more at risk, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, definitely. I'd see it quite a bit, because with my particular population, many, although again, I like to, because it's a misconception about students with emotional disabilities, they have average to above average intelligence. They can perform with the best of them, honestly. But they have just experienced some of them have experienced success, but the majority have not. And then also you have that behavioral piece, and it comes to the point where you end up, they have a reputation, like they're the, oh, there's that student, or they're the ones who, I mean, they just have really negative reputations, and they're always in trouble, and they don't always know that there's another side to them, which is why I enjoy teaching middle school, because it is such an important few years, and it, to me, it's pivotal, because they're going into high school the next year, and this is our last effort to try to help them and change something and turn some things around, and hopefully help them to experience the success that they need, so that they can go into high school a little bit more confident than before.
I think that those, were you going to say something? Because I interrupted you without even, just by moving toward that mic, didn't I, Alan? No. I worked again this fall doing some substitute teaching, and went into a school. So I know these kids do get identified. In this particular situation, all of the subs in the school that day, and there was an event that required a large number of us, were given lunch the same time period, and the conversation started. And I was sitting at the edge of the room, and they were talking about where they liked to go, where they didn't like to go. And then they started talking about who were the difficult students. And someone asked me if I had had any difficult students. I said a couple. And one of them said, yeah, well, you haven't seen anything until you've been over to blank school. I said, I was at blank school. Well, you haven't dealt with blank student. And all of the other subs chimed in, yeah, you haven't seen anything until you've seen this student. Guess what? I had him.
But you did not have expectations that kid would be a troublemaker. Is
actually,
that
I was. I was forewarned, but the teacher gave me some strategies.
There you go.
Separating him from his sidekick, giving him something to do. Was he difficult? Yes. Was he a nightmare? No. So, and I don't know that works in all cases, but what I'm saying with this is, I know that teachers know who these students are, and my fear is that they may get labeled too early. My other fear is, what do you do? Because sometimes you're in such a difficult situation about how you manage behavior, how you manage the challenges you face, right?
Exactly. And then that just reminded me of something that happened. And again, going back to the students, when Rose immediately said that no one hears their voice, I remember one of my colleagues told, I ended up with a student in my classroom. He was out in the general education population, and he experienced success in my room because I heard about him. I was a little nervous, but to try to give him a fresh start in my classroom. And when we asked him, okay, what's the biggest issue that you're having, or what's the difference between now and then, his biggest frustration was that, well, everyone already judged me and said that, oh, that assumed that I was going to be the same as the year before. So he just fell right back into the old behaviors because that's what was expected of him.
Well, speaking of expectations, and if you don't mind me revisiting one of your original comments about graduation rate, is 100% graduation rate a fair expectation for a society to have?
What happens to the kids who don't?
Well, I guess I was also asking, is public school for everyone? I mean, obviously there are a certain number of people, if they're dropping out of school, who don't feel like anyone either cares about them or they don't feel interested enough to stay with it.
So what are the implications of that for the rest of us? I'm going to throw the challenge right back at you. What do we do with that?
Well, I think the challenge needs to be shared by the schools, the home, and the community.
And I didn't mean I'm throwing that back at you, Alan, but I'm just saying, okay, let's take that, but what do we do with it?
Okay, if you don't mind my running with the ball, the community might, in the business-school partnerships, the community may present opportunities for kids to go out on internships or visitations, work-study. I've had kids tell me they'd like to be something, but until you go out and do it, you don't know enough about it. The opportunities for the children to see themselves in a life past high school is very important. For the family to start in before the kids can talk back to you. I mean, when they're babies, you know, you're going to go to high school and you're going to graduate and then you're going to go to college. Now, college may not also be for everyone, but it's not a bad way of starting out. And in schools, children do get labeled. Now, none of us would ever do this, but you hear teachers saying, oh, that kid's lucky if he graduates middle school, let alone high school. We need to believe in our students and tell them we see them as successful. If I can take a moment to plug my employer, IPS instituted an Office of College Readiness this year. When our announcement came on in the morning, they said, have a great day at School 70 where all students are college bound. We did college readiness activities every single week in every single classroom from kindergarten through 12, all of IPS. Every classroom adopted a college, and we adopted Juilliard, of course, because it was performing arts. But we also took them to Butler. One of my kids said, and this is almost a direct quote, I think college is like heaven. It sounds like a good place to go, but I don't know much about it. I don't know anybody who's been, and I haven't any idea what it would be like. We took them to a physical place called Butler, and now when they hear the word college, they have a place.
That you made it real for them.
Hopefully that will help.
Sure. We're getting into the closing moments of the program, and I want to thank everyone for listening to this American Graduate Edition of No Limits. What are some of your closing thoughts about things that we might do to make things more successful, to help more children succeed? And Tianu?
I would like, again, to go with the respect for educators in the community as a whole, and then support. Genuine support. It can be in any way. It's not just monetary. Just like I want to say, Caleb mentioned, just congratulate a student or ask them about how their day was, what's going on in school. Allow that accountability piece and let them know that someone does care and that someone is there for them. Take 5 minutes of your time. Go volunteer at a school for a fair. Or, hey, I'm a doctor, a lawyer, or a teacher, and I just would like to speak with your classroom today about such and such. Just the little things make a huge impact.
Alan, your thoughts?
Okay, can we revisit the final question again? I was listening to her.
Success, things we can do to help.
Okay, so to summarize success, accountability. I think that also that the students understand that the school is a place to go and to get an education, and their parents' help, support is huge and important. those are some of the big ones.
Adrian? Support, communication, teachers reach out to your parents, parents reach out to the teachers, and read to your children, whether they're 3 or 13.
And if you don't have kids, you can read to nieces, nephews, neighbors.
You can come to my classroom and read to my kids.
There you go. I'm Joanne Clues, and you're listening to an American Graduate edition of No Limits on WFYI. John Kroll returns next week. Thank you so much for being part of the conversation today.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.